Got a question or comment? Need savvy travel advice? Connect with Rudy, Robert, and Mary anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at RM World Travel. Now, back to RM World Travel.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Rudy Maxa. This segment of the program is sponsored by the Timeshare Freedom Group. If you own a timeshare and want out, well, listen up. We all celebrate things every day, like birthdays, anniversaries, other milestones. But the best 2 days you celebrate when owning a timeshare is the day you buy it and the day you get rid of it. That's because after suffering through annual maintenance fees and mortgage payments that cost hundreds or even thousands of dollars every month, getting out of your timeshare really is something to celebrate. Now, if you're seeking to free yourself from a timeshare, call the team Timeshare Freedom Group. They're the experts to get you out of your contract. Whether you've had it for 30 days or 30 years, the company has successfully helped tens of thousands of people get rid of their timeshares. And they're offering a 100% money-back guarantee. So we say, quit paying these annual maintenance fees and those outrageous mortgage payments. Celebrate timeshare freedom by calling the Timeshare Freedom Group today at 1-877-969-2110. That's 877-969-2110. Or find a link at rmworldtravel.com. That's the radio show's website, by looking under sponsors. For hundreds of years, a sea route to the Pacific Ocean through North America, called the Northwest Passage, was a quest for explorers from England, France, and Spain. The idea was there must be a way to go through what is now Canada up to the Arctic Ocean in order to trade and bring back the riches of the East. We've all heard of, as Americans, we've all heard of Lewis and Clark, who tried to find that Northwest Passage and eventually did. But before that, 14 years before that, a fur trader named Alexander Mackenzie traveled 1,200 miles along a river in northwestern Canada that he hoped would lead him to the Northwest Passage. And that is the subject of a new book called Disappointment River, Finding and Losing the Northwest Passage. It's written by my guest, Brian Kastner. And not only is it a story of Alexander Mackenzie, it's the story of the author's trip on his own up that river in a canoe. Brian, nice to have you here. Welcome.
It is wonderful to be with you. Thank you very much.
Okay, so Americans tend to know the names of Lewis and Clark. But our boy here, your boy, Mackenzie, Alexander Mackenzie, was a Scotsman who came to the United States. And he started working up in Canada and wanted to find, as many Europeans did, a route through North America to be able to trade with China. And what was he selling?
He was a fur trader, and so the system at the time, it could take 3 or 4 years by the time they ordered goods like gunpowder and rum and cloth and such from Europe, shipped it, across the Atlantic, up the St. Lawrence Seaway, and then to all these fur trading posts in the interior of North America. And then by the time you traded with the indigenous tribes there for beaver fur and shipped it back and then shipped a lot of them to China, it would just take years. And so Mackenzie was a refugee to America. Well, it wasn't America yet. It was New York City in 1775. The revolution was just getting started. And he did most of his travels in what's now Canada. But, of course, at the time, a lot of that land was just unclaimed. It was no man's land. It was everybody's land. Everybody claimed it. And it was really still an open question of, what would these lands turn into, whether Canada or the United States or New France or parts of Britain or who knows what?
He began his quest in 1789. It's interesting. Captain Cook, who's, again, more famous than Alexander Mackenzie, started in 1778, tried to find the Northwest Passage. And he did it the opposite way. Instead of going from Montreal, Quebec, that sort of area, across North America, he started along the West Coast looking for an opening. He failed, and shortly thereafter, he failed died by being beaten to death on a Hawaiian island. And as you note, in a right reserved by royalty, the natives on the Hawaiian island cooked Cook and deboned him. I thought that was I didn't know it was quite that gruesome. But anyway, 11 years later is when Alexander Mackenzie came along. And you write, I don't want to give away too much of it, but he actually found the Northwest Passage, but he didn't know he'd found it because, of ice, right?
Let me give away the end of my own book a little bit. When Mackenzie gets to the end of this massive river, there's a giant plug of ice in the end. It's pack ice in the Arctic. And you're right. So Cook was trying to find the end of the passage, people thought they knew the front of the passage in the St. Lawrence River, and all everything around Greenland and Baffin Island and all those islands up in northern Canada, those were all plugged with ice. And so everybody thought, well, there must be a route, and we know where one end of it is, and maybe Cook, he went looking for the other, and he actually found an inlet, which is Cook's Inlet in what's now modern-day Anchorage. And the river that Mackenzie thought he was traveling was going to connect Great Slave Lake, which is a giant lake up in what's now the Northwest Territories of Canada. There's a massive river that leaves to the west, and he thought it was going to connect to modern-day Anchorage. And in fact, the map he had said it was only going to be a few-day trip, 3 or 4 days, and he would make it to the Pacific. And instead, that massive river it hits the Rocky Mountains. Of course, those are in the way. And makes a big right-hand turn and goes to the Arctic. And it's 1,125 miles or so from Great Slave Lake to the ocean. And when he gets there, he sees nothing but pack ice.
And so he doesn't. How far away was he actually from getting into the Arctic Sea at that point, had he known it?
Oh, he was right there. I mean, he was.
Really?
The delta, he makes it out to a place he calls Whale Island because it was surrounded by beluga whales. Today it's known as Garry Island, and that was the goal for my own journey. And it's the very last island out off the delta. And he tries to paddle a little bit further out, but if there was no ice there, he could have paddled all the way, around the north end of what's now Alaska, Bering Strait. He could have made it the whole way.
Oh, my goodness. The book is called Disappointment River, subtitled Finding and Losing the Northwest Passage. It's a new book by the author with whom we're speaking, Brian Kastner. And Brian decided to, and by the way, this river used to be called the Day Cho, I guess. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Right, the Day Cho, and the Dene people who still live there, they still know it as the Day Cho.
But it's been renamed the Mackenzie River because of his adventure, right?
Right, so it's... There's a movement in many places in Canada to return names back to their original, way they were known. And I have to admit, by the end of my own journey on this river, mm-hmm. calling it the Mackenzie seemed like a very presumptuous name. He only paddled it once. It felt really like an ancient, just massive force. And I think of it myself as the Day Cho now.
Now, this was no leisurely paddle upstream, this river that cuts through the Northwest Territories, was it?
No, I mean, it's huge, and it's hard to describe exactly how big it is. In some places, you can't see the other side. In many places, it takes an hour or two to paddle across. There is tremendous current. It's actually much more like the Mississippi. You just kind of hop on and go for a ride. And, when you're out there on the water and you have the north wind, screaming off the Arctic, and then the current, heading north, when those two things combine, you just get enormous white caps and waves, the way you would on a big open lake or the ocean, honestly. You just get 5-6 foot white caps in a lot of places when we were doing our trip.
It took you 6 months of planning to store the food, figure out, satellite phone, take everything modern that you could with you to help you on your trip. How long did your journey take?
It took 40 days, and I admit it felt pretty biblical by the end of it. And yeah, I mean, we had so many modern advantages. We had really good tent. We had the GPS. We had a map. We knew where we were going. Mackenzie didn't know where he was going. But at the same time, there were moments where you're still in a canoe and you still have a paddle, and just because you have a fancy life vest doesn't mean you really want to put it to the test, of course. And so some of the challenge has remained simply because of the mode of travel we chose.
Well, I think you put it this way. I only have a minute left, but I want to read this part of your book that affected me. Mackenzie wanted to go sell fur to Asia in the long run. You write that you wanted something more existential, and I quote you, pure urge from the groin and gut and the other anxious parts of the body, a need to flee before death or quiet desperation or both, to light out for the territories with Huck, like Huck Finn. I find that was your motive, I mean, as well as tracing and bringing to light the history of this guy, Mackenzie. Well done. Well done, Brian.
Well, thank you much. Ernest Shackleton calls it the lure of little voices. And I have a hard time explaining, I think, why go out and do something like this. And a biological urge is the best I could come up with.
What did your wife call it?
Silly and pig-headed, I think, a little bit. But she, I don't know, this idea of wanderlust is just something that I've always had. And so, it's something that we've come to terms with in our marriage, I guess.
We're the winners for it. The book is called Disappointment River. Brian Kastner, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Today's edition of RM World Travel is coming right back, and you can also stay connected with the program at rmworldtravel.com.